Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Oopa Loopa Cafe, a place where storytellers gather, where old sailors relive their travels, where shamans and mystics reveal their esoteric secrets, where mammoth are hunted and cave walls are turned into art galleries. Some visitors here bring the detective skills of Sherlock Holmes. Some bring ancient tools found in the backyard. Some bring insights into how ancient people lived, loved, died, and were buried. Much of what you will see and hear in this place, you won't find in a history book, but you should. This is the Oopa Loopa Cafe, where the heroes of old come alive and legends live again. A place where history is exciting. A place where adventures begin. Come with us and explore.
And hello! This is indeed the Oopa Loopa Cafe, and this is your host, Rick Osmond. Fresh back from a trip up to visit with Scott Walter and a few other folks in Minnesota. We have a wonderful lineup for you tonight. We have a guest by the name of Joseph E. Mason, and he is going to explain for us what the gematric code is, how it works, and just how pervasive it actually is in ancient sites. How you doing, Joseph?
Fine. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'm certainly glad to have you. You have assembled for us a website to help illustrate some of these points, and I'm going to copy that, put it in the chase into the chat room right now, and we'll also call it out verbally. It is www.greatdreams.com/radio/oz/ozradio.htm. And I've also put it into the permanent links list on the main show page. So if you're in the chat room or on the individual show page here, you can just click on Ozman, and it'll take you to the main page, and you can go down the links list and find it. For anyone who's listening to it in archive, look for Joe Mason Info. So, Joseph,
yeah.
We have, like I said, you have assembled a web page that illustrates or helps to illustrate a lot of what we call the Carl Munk Code, although it is a lot older than Carl is.
Right.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. On this web page I set up, give a link to Carl's page, which is pyramidmatrix.com. But we have had a site online since about 1998. That covers it pretty well, and it's pretty popular. Like, if you search on Google, you'll find it. But basically, the idea of his code involves these ancient sites found all around the world that he has decoded. And as I understand it, it's over 200 of them the last time I heard. So, and the claim is, the theory, and this was well backed up by his work, is that the ancient sites are very exactly positioned on the earth on a coordinate system that uses these very ancient numbers and constants like pi and the radian and so forth. And the prime meridian in the system, in other words, the zero point as far as longitude, left and right or east and west, is at the Great Pyramid at Giza, whereas today it's located at Greenwich, England. So in order to do this code, you have to adjust for about 30 degrees, 8 minutes, and 08 seconds difference between the location of Greenwich and the Great Pyramid.
And you end up with a comparable longitude, corrected longitude, I guess would be the right way to say it.
Right, it would be corrected to the old code that apparently the ancient people used. And all this is hard to believe, but, I mean, it's a powerful backing of it because you've got over 200 sites. Okay, the way he goes about this, and by the way, it only works if you use the latest, satellite data. if you go back to the old systems they used to use, it's not accurate enough to show the close locations. So he's using the latest data. And the first one we have on here, okay, well, maybe I ought to read a couple of things I wrote down here. The sites are, the coding is in the geometry of the construction of the sites. So you have to look at the site and start counting different corners or steps or whatever it is. This system, he has the numbers called gematria, but it's not the one that most people are familiar with, which is Hebrew and Greek gematria. This is apparently an older system. And I'll explain a little bit more about those numbers. And you find these numbers in ancient myths and religions around the world, including in the Bible. For example, the 144,000, that's one of the numbers, the number 144, and then with various zeros. In ancient times, they were also related to systems of weights and measures by the Greeks, the Egyptians, the Persians, the Babylonians, and the Romans. The Mayans used the same system in their very accurate timekeeping. The system uses the same convention that we do today on this cartographic system of 360-degree circle around the Earth, and it's divided into 60 minutes and 60 seconds. So it uses the base 10 numbering system, even though some of these ancient people didn't, which is strange. And it includes numbers that we still use today, like the 12-inch foot and the 5,280-foot mile. Now, there's other parts of this that explains that these numbers were already in place when written language started. You know, they find them in these old clay cuneiform tablets from ancient Sumeria, which is, you know, later became Babylon and then it's present-day Iraq. So they're literally beyond written history. So it probably had to do with ancient weights and measures and so forth. There's a little part explaining the cartographic system itself about the 90 degrees and the meridians and so forth. Then we come to an introduction of the code where one of our code friends named Michael Morton gave the details about how Carl decoded Stonehenge. And it gives the various numbers and so forth and how they adjusted it. And the idea comes from, there were several stages of Stonehenge. I don't know whether you know that, but at one stage it used 60 stones. There was 30 uprights and then stones on top, lintels. There was 30 of those. So he had 60 stones in a 360-degree circle. This is what it's figured by. So if you multiply that 60 times 360, you come out with the number 21,600. Well, that is equivalent to the coordinate that sets the latitude 50 degrees 10 minutes 42.3529 seconds. Because if you multiply the degrees times the minutes times the second, it comes out to 21,600. You see what I mean? So they've shown the positioning by the actual structure. And all you have to do is count and get the right things about it. So that goes through the details and how to adjust for the degree offset from the prime meridian. And then it goes into the latitude, and that's where you have to make that adjustment. And
you mean the longitude, I think.
Right, right. In the longitude, east and west, it has to make that adjustment. Anyway, that comes out to a figure where you have the radian degrees times pi times 2 pi times the square root of 2160 equals this number that's 52562 and then point several numbers. Anyway, if you multiply that out, it equals the right latitude.
Right. For anybody who's just tuning in, you can follow this along in detail at www.greatdreams.com/radio/Oz/OzRadio.htm. And Joseph has put together good illustrations, including all of the mathematics, the geometry, and sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention.
Right. So thank you for that. Also, if they can't seem to find the site, we do really well on Google searches with certain words. So one of the ways you could do it is type in on Google or another search engine, but I like Google the best, crop circles meaning. And our page should be the first one that comes up. It's an attempt to find the meaning of the crop circles. On that page, not too far from the top, you'll find a link to this show and a big thing saying the Oopaloopa radio show. So they can find it and click on it from there if they want to.
Right.
Okay. Now, after you get the longitude and latitude, you get what he calls the grid point value. And this has to do with the multiplication of the longitude and latitude, or a division, rather. And anyway, in this case, it comes out to be the number 20, a nice even number. Now, I didn't include it here, but he also has what he calls kites. And what he means by that, if you take several ancient sites, let's say one in America and one in Mexico, one in South America or something like that, Well, in this case, you would have four different ones, and you connect the lines, and it looks a little bit like a kite, where you have a top one and then two to the left and right below it, and then down farther you have another one. And anyway, when you multiply the grid point value of each one, which he calls coordinate point, or CI, then it comes out to some other number that's a nice even number, like 3 pi or whatever, or the radian. So it's another curious thing about it.
But it always comes back to some derivation of a circle segment, whether it's an arc or a chord or whatever. It always comes out even.
Yeah, it seems to always be related to a circle in one way or another. And they don't always come out even numbers, all of the numbers. A lot of them are what they call irrational.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said... I didn't mean whole numbers. They always come out to some integral or
right.
Some related number to a circle centered at Giza.
Right. That's right. Anyway, another part of it down here, there's a little thing, Gematria by Hannah, which is this fellow that knew a lot about these numbers and sent him all sorts of this stuff. And he tells about it... the 5th century B.C. trading empire of the Eastern Mediterranean, of the Phoenicians, saw the appearance of a writing mode in which alphabetical letters served as numbers. Even at this early date, however, its roots were lost in the mist of time. From this base evolved the Hebraic and later Greek systems of gematria. Both had reached a high degree of development by the 3rd century B.C. And... he talks about how some of this is found in metrology, in other words, the systems of weights and measures. And he said, with this idea in mind and with the sacred geometry, these can be viewed with new eyes. With numbers, alphabetical cryptography becomes the law. Biblical numbers and structure dimensions become alphabetical statements. The word number becomes flesh, dimensional, four numbers or words. Okay, the next part is how Carl tried to study this gematria, because he knew it was turning up in his code, but he couldn't find any information on gematria. As a matter of fact, when I got online in late 96, I looked for the word gematria, and there was almost nothing on it. And now it's huge. You'd have millions and millions, So it's something that's really taken off, but it used to be big in the past. Apparently there was a suppression of it, by various churches, science, or whatever it was. But that's kind of typical, as you can imagine you run into with your work also.
Yeah, it's almost pervasive. But the the work that he's done, and I'm just going to generalize in just a moment, rather than concentrate on all of the numerical detail. You mentioned earlier that Carl had accumulated 200 sites that fit this mold.
Right.
And it's sites on all continents, with the exception so far of Antarctica.
Yeah, that's, I think that's right. I had a list of them. I don't have it with me now, of the ones he had back a few years ago when I was studying it more. Not all 200, but they are all around. Pardon?
And looking through his stuff as I did, which was briefly compared to what you've done, not only the Mesoamerican sites and the North American mound sites,
right,
but also sites in the Caribbean, sites in...
That's right.
Sub-Saharan.
Sharks Mound.
Yeah.
Places
they're
like
everywhere.
That.
And
pardon?
According
yeah.
to Carl's derivation of their features, they all come up to meet the code.
Right. On our main code page, I get the link there. It's called Code of the Ancients, and it's about Carl Monk's code. We've got, actually, I think it's 14 different article pages on it. And each of the pages is pretty long. Like if you print it, it's able to be 65 pages. And we got 14 of them. And it covers some of the other sites of Carl Monk that he figured out.
Yeah,
anyway,
and it even goes to things as obscure as the Shark Mound on Bimini.
Right.
Correct.
Uh-huh. In another part here where it talks about Carl Monk's finds geometry and numbers related to the code, and it talks about the material that he got from this fellow Hanna, and it talked about the work of Lewis K. Bell, one of the persons who studied the ancient meteorology, and examples he gave about this metrology, which is about weights and measures. He gave several examples here. I'll read the first one. In ancient Babylonia, a long unit of measure was called the kasbu, was well known. It was 129600 suthi in length. 129600 is the square of 360. And in the global matrix, the same figure which was used to encode the West Giza longitude of Shark Mound on North Bimini Island. So it mentions it's there and what number was used. Now, this number here, that's 129,600, which is the square of 360, is a number that keeps popping up over and over in this article I wrote, and that's what I was concentrating on telling. And sometimes it's just the first four, 1296. And that's 6 to the fourth power. And it relates to quite a few other things, like the zodiac, the precession through the zodiac ages. Half of the precession is this same number with 10 on it. So it's 6 to the 4th power times 10. And there's coincidences about that, too, also. Okay, it goes on through other different measures the same way. And these multiples of 6, like the number 216, and 2160, and multiples of that. That was the same as Stonehenge. It had two zeros at the end. And 216 is 6 to the third power. Now, so there's a lot of this, you know, things that involves the divisions of the number 6. Anyway, then it comes down to a point where it talks about these different numbers had meanings, but it's not a real thorough understanding of this by me anyway at this point. I'm learning some. In other words, how they came about getting these meanings. Anyway, it starts out 144 equals light, 288 equals double light, the kingdom of heaven, 432 consecration, 396 classical earth radius of 3,960 miles, and it goes on and on for several of those, and there's many more. And then he detailed some of these different numbers, wrote them down from all these different places, and we put them in tables here, and we put asterisks by the ones that were considered gematrian, that, in other words, ones that he had found in his code. And he did it with, you know, what was it, the Romans and the Babylonians and the Mayans and so forth, who used what. And later on, as he did this, he found out that these numbers all have just two tangents other than the tangent of zero. In other words, let's say the number 72, that would have a certain tangent. And the number 576, that has a certain tangent. But there's only two of them. There's four if you consider plus and minus. But
right.
If you ignore the plus and minus, there's only two. So he finally, when he put them in these tables, saw that they certainly looked like a frequency, like a sine wave type thing, you know, up and down and up and down. So he wound up multiplying the two tangents. One is 3.077, and it goes on out to about 8 decimal points. The other one is 0.726, and, you know, goes out to so many decimal places. So he multiplied them. He came up with the result of 2.236067977. And because he works with numbers so much, he recognized that is the square root of 5. And I'll just read it here. It says, that's the pyramid talking, Carl says. He asks, why does the square root of 5 answer the sine waves of the sacred numbers? What was the reasoning behind it? Because the square root of 5 is itself a tangent, the tangent of 1862, and he lists that out, and he said, which is the speed of light in air. Now, that is very strange, I think.
Yep.
Okay.
Coincidences are just keep piling up on this.
Right.
So you mentioned that, I guess I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but it comes into, some of these numbers come into a wave form, a sinusoidal wave form.
Right. This next part will kind of explain some of that, too. Below this part about Carl, I have Joe Mason's Geometria System, and because after I read it, different things happened, because I had already ran into a lot of this myself. That's how I got in contact with Carl Monk. Anyway, I tell the different experiences I had and the numbers. But just as an example, one night at work, the numbers 72 and 360 kept coming into my mind while I was on swing shift at work, and just kept coming over and over. So finally I stopped, and I multiplied 72 times 360, and the answer is 25,920. And I knew by then that was the precession of the equinoxes. So just different things like that. So, and also I had studied crop circles, and I was finding those sort of numbers in those also, and I explain that here. Anyway, then the next part under that is Joe's Dream of the Gematrian Wheel. And there's actually a link from this to page 4 of the Code of the Ancients, and that's the whole article about this Gematrian Wheel, and then Carl Monk's response to it. He put it in his newsletter and put a very long, nice response he had. Basically, the dream was that I saw a generator revolving. I knew this had to do with gematria, producing a sine wave. You know how when you have a magnetic field rotating in another magnetic field, or a magnet rotating in a coil magnetic field, it produces the sine wave, just like if you put an oscilloscope on your electrical outlet, that's what you see, right?
Yep.
And so when I woke up from this, I started figuring out what kind of sine wave it would be, or what kind of generator. In other words, how many poles you have on it. Anyway, it turned out you take a circle, which is 360 degrees, and divide it into 10 parts, so that the first marking is 36 degrees, the next one's 72, then 108, then 144, 180 at the bottom, 216, see there, that's 6 by 6 by 6, 252, 288, 324, and then back to the top. Now, if you continue around this thing, so you're at 360 on when you've done one circle and you go to the next one, you add 36 to it, so it's 396. That's that number that is a tenth of the radius of the Earth. And so when you do complete circles, like the first one's 36, if you do another circle, you have 720, right?
Right.
So you wind up, for example, 7,920 is the diameter of the Earth, and so on. So you come up with all these numbers. So the number 144,000 in the Bible is 400 times around the wheel. In other words, that's how the zeros are added. Because if you check the tangents on these, if you have a zero on the end, it will usually be a zero tangent. So you have to take the zero off the end to see the type of tangent. So basically,
well, the other thing, I'm going to digress once again. One of the things I do best. One of the things we discussed on the phone a couple of weeks ago when we were discussing doing this show, when you do more than one full circle, you now have what's called a wave number. When you do more than one full rotation, you end up with a wave number of greater than one. So two full rotations would be a wave number of two, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
So the other thing is when you plot those rotations over time in a linear fashion, you have a plus and a minus function around a given, you know, zero point. So your wave number of whatever greater than one ends up being plotted as a sine wave. So it goes right back to the tangent.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for people that don't know much about this sort of thing, these tangents have to do with angle, right? In other words, kind of the direction you're pointing, north, south, east, west, and the points in between. Okay, the next part I talk about, well, I mentioned during this part that after I realized it was a 10-part wheel, I remembered there was two important crop circle formations that were divided into 10 parts. The first was in 1993, what they called the Bithorn Mandala, and it looks like a flower type thing with a pentagram and a pentagon inside of it. And it's related to the figure called Kali in the Eastern religions. And we believe that that corresponds to the harlot of Revelation, actually. And it shows this five-pointed star with one of the points pointing south. A star in that position, in like Velazquez's secret doctrine, the thing she found back from way back when, it's a esoteric symbol of the Kali Yuga time cycle. I don't know whether you've ever heard of that. It's called the Age of Iron. And other systems have the same thing, including the Bible, I believe, because these ages of the Hindus that they had, it started with gold, then silver, then bronze, then iron. We're in the Iron Age now. And if you look at the dream of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, he sees the frightening image that had a head of gold, chest and arms of silver, a belly and thighs of bronze, and feet, or legs of iron, and feet part iron, part clay. So it has the same numbers there. And Daniel interpreted that to be the ages. So the Bithorn Mandala is also thought to relate to the third chakra, as they show them as flowers, like lotus flowers.
Right.
And so the next year, in 1994, what they call the spider web crop formation appeared, and it was also looked just like a spider web, and it had radial lines dividing that circle into 10 parts. And it was right next to Avebury Stone Circle, this ancient site. And see, these crop circles very often appear, you know, right next to them or aligned with the ancient sites, so it seems to be connecting them. Okay, on my thing, after I talk about that dream I had of the gematrian wheel, I talk about the 20-part 666 tangent wheel, and that has to do with numbers in between the points on this 10-part wheel, so that they would be evenly divided by 18. One of those numbers is the number 666. The first one would be the number 54, but another example of that is the number 126, and that number, if you put a zero on it, 1260, that appears in Revelation 11 and 12 as 1260 days. It's equivalent to 3.5 months in the Jewish calendar, you know, half of 7 months. So then I talk about the six-part wheel, which would divide it into 60 degrees each. And these numbers with 60 degrees, they tend to have a tangent that is the square root of 3. In one of those, if you go 88 times 60, it works out to 5,280, our feet in a mile. And if you check the tangent of that, it's the same. It's the square root of 3 tangent. Okay, the next part, I talk about the special number 153. I probably ought to pause here in case you have another question about the previous part.
Well, I don't, but I'm watching the chat room for questions. Nothing's come up yet.
Okay, I'll continue on.
I would like to kind of relate this to some other work, somewhat related work, but coming at it from a different angle. And some of the listeners will be familiar with this, some won't, perhaps. A couple of guys by the name of Jay Wakefield and Renu DeJong put out a book a few years back entitled How the Sun God Reached America. And in it, they used Renu's theory that many of the ancient sites, particularly the standing stone sites, relate information, encode information, I should say, regarding discoveries of other lands, not only where those lands lay with relation to whatever site it is, but also the year of discovery, all encoded into the site. And it's very, I shouldn't say it's very similar in nature to Carl's code. However, it is related in as much as there are a number of examples of complicated mathematics, but it too works. I mean, the numbers don't lie. All the numbers add up to these ancient sites being found with a relationship to a specific point in both space and time. So, you know, numbers don't lie.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd like to check that out. I'll look that up later.
Okay.
It's kind of, are you finished or?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it's a little bit of a coincidence here because the next part, the special number 153, and it starts like this. Several years ago, I read a book about Greek gematria called Jesus Christ, Son of God, S-U-N, by David Fiedler. Have you ever heard of that book?
I have not.
And the idea is, it goes back in, you know, ancient history and so forth, that where they had these sun gods, right? One of the main ones they talk about is Mithra. You ever heard of Mithra, Mithraism? There's a lot of stuff they've discovered about that. They actually had a lot of knowledge about the precession and things like that, but they encoded it with all these symbols that made it look just pagan or whatever, but it really wasn't so much. So anyway, when the Christianity started, they naturally related Jesus Christ to this same type of figure. So, because the sun, S-U-N, is related to the sun, S-O-N. And in my material that I've done with this dream coincidence and studies and so forth, crop circles and so on, this eventually, I believe, relates to the tree of life in the center of the tree of life, the Kabbalistic one. Have you ever seen that? I've got a picture of it on the new page here. The sixth sphere, right, in the middle is the sun. Okay, so I think that's what it's talking about, and it's our higher self, so to speak. Anyway, I don't want to get too diverted here. But anyway, it talks about, in that book, Jesus Christ, Son of God, about the 153 fish in the net story that's in John 21 in the Bible. And they say that this was a much older story told by the Greeks and Pythagoras and this sort of thing. And there's a geometry involved related to what they call the seed of life, which is part of the flower of life series. Are you very familiar with that?
I'm aware of it. I wouldn't say I'm familiar.
Okay, I've got pictures and so forth on the page. And the seed of life, if you take a compass and draw a circle, and then you put your compass over to the circumference and draw another circle, you have a Pisces, Pisces, right? And then you move it over to where the circle intersects the other one to draw another one. And if you keep doing that, you wind up with six circles and interlocking rings around the central circle. And it looks like a little flower inside, like a little daisy flower or sunflower.
Right.
So this is a huge in these crop circles. And it's being found other places around the world, ancient sites. There's one in Abydos, Egypt, on the wall. And if you put a bunch of those together, they call it the flower of life. And if you put various other ones, you eventually come out to other ones that where there's 13 spheres, and they call that the, what is it, the food of life or something like that. Anyway, eventually you build up to this cube figure, which is called Metatron's cube. So anyway, so this six-part wheel has to do with that. And I call that the six-part wheel or the 20-part wheel. So if you put two stars inside the circle, like remember I said, the birth and Mandela, that divides it into five sections. If you put another star in there, reverse the other way, it divides it into this 10 sections. Okay, so below that I have something about the number 153 in the work of James Furia. Have you ever heard of him? He was associative of Karl Monk, and he came up with these theories about music because he's a musician, and he has a little section on the 153. And he explains that if you add the numbers 1 through 17, it equals 153. And then there's different things about in the Giza complex, the total pyramids at Giza, there was 17. And if you go by times 9 is 153. And 360 feet up the Great Pyramid is the 153rd course, and so on. Also, if you take different... The numbers 153 and rearrange them in order and then add them, you come up with a lot of 666. Like 153 plus 513 is 666. 315 plus 351 equals 666 and so on. We don't really believe that that's just evil, right? Like Christianity would say. In fact, I believe it's related to that sphere of the tree of life in the middle, the seed of life one. Because each of those has a magic square associated depending on the number. Like Earth is on the bottom, it's number 10. It would have a 10 times 10 square, and it'd have 100 spaces. If you have the 6 one, you make a 6 by 6 square, like a grid, and you fill in the numbers 1 through 36 in it in such a way that all the rows and columns and diagonals add to 111. The total of the numbers adds to 666. In other words, the numbers 1 through 36 add to 666. Now, that number and the 153 number are what they call a triangle number or a triangular number. Never even heard pyramid number. You can look that up and find things about it. And what that means is if you put, let's say, a circle and then two circles below it, then three, then four. That's what they call a Pythagorean tetrachus. It's like bowling pins are arranged. They're like cue balls so that you have an even triangle with these circles. Then if you go down the different rows, like if you get to four rows, there's a total of 10 circles and so on. And so when you get to the 17th row, there's 153. And when you get to the 36th row, there's 666 total. So anyway, I think it's related to that, and it's the number of man, I think, in this time cycle before we will reach more of a perfection in the future. And this flower, according to different dreams and stuff, will open like an aperture and turn into a 12-petal-type flower with a Star of David or some similar design in the center. That seems to be what it's indicating. And that corresponds to the heart chakra in the chakra system. So this whole thing in my theory about these earth changes is a leap to the heart chakra. Anyway, moving on here, I go into the crop circle connections, and I talk about the different ones that seem to be related to these things, these different numbers and so on. I'll kind of skip the rest of that for now. And then the last part of the Karl Monk Code specifically on this, all this is taken from the main page about Karl Monk. It talks about the Great Pyramid and 432, confirmation from the message of the Sphinx. And it talks about the message of the Sphinx is by Graham Hancock and Robert Bouval. And right. They tell... how the perimeter of the base and the height have a correspondence to the 360 degrees around the Earth and the distance from the Earth to from the equator to the pole by a multiple of 43,200. In other words, 432 plus two zeros.
Mm-hmm.
Now remember that 432 was an important gematria number. It's the 12th point on the wheel. In other words, if you go around one time, you've got 10 points. So that's 360. So if you go two more points, that adds 72 to it. So anyway, you get this 432. Also, 432 is a time cycle number, according to the mythologist Joseph Campbell, who studied myths and religions around the world. For example, that Kali Yuga time cycle is said to be 432,000 years long, and they find that number all over the world. Okay, should I pause there for a minute before going into the next section, where I'm going to some of my own coincidental stuff?
Well, actually, I'm going to invite callers to call in with any questions probably in the next hour, because that's only 20 minutes away, so 18 minutes, actually.
Okay. So should I continue here?
This is just a notice to the listeners that if they have any questions for them, to get them ready, and if not, then form them, and we'll try to clear them up for you. So.
Okay. Great. Okay, this next part, it's titled Yucatan Coincidence, Cellular Communication via DNA. And the rest of the whole thing, most of it, not all of it, has something connected to this whole idea. And I start out by telling of an actual incident when I was in the Yucatan in 1982. I don't travel very much, but I happened to go there. It was on my honeymoon, actually. And traveled around a number of sites there, including Chichen Itza. And I had this stirring moment, I call it, where it was one of the steps of the Temple of the Warriors, and turned around and look at the big Kukulkan pyramid they call El Castillo. It's got the feathered serpent snake heads at the bottom. That's the one where the shadow shines on the equinoxes to make the snake's body. I've got some pictures of it here on the page. So, anyway, I've got a picture of where I was standing. There's this reclining figure called the Chokmul that's up there at the top of the steps of the Temple of the Warriors. And I had a few other things that were kind of a stirring moment in the ball court where they have the hoop. You've heard of that, right? They have the game they call Pock de Pock, where they...
Right.
It's a little bit like soccer. And then there's the cenote well. That's a big hole in the ground with water in the bottom. And I've got a map of this, too, where you can see each one, including where the cenote well is. So, anyway, one coincidence later, well, this had more to do than I've got on the page, but basically that cenote well is the remnant of the great meteorite that struck there 65 million years ago, causing the extinction of the dinosaurs and the other species. And when they drilled down into the ground, 1,100 meters below ground, they found fractured crystallized quartz. And they say that this meteorite was 6 or 7 miles wide. So there's a lot of crystal down there, right?
Yep.
Next, I come to this map of the Yucatan area that was in a book called The Book of Knowledge, The Keys of Enoch, which is a visionary experience starting in 1973 by a scientist named James J. Hertek. And he was given all this information in this visionary thing about the area of the Yucatan. It's going to be a communication point to the heavens in the future when there's a grid shift in alignment. Now, this all sounds far out. And he said there was crystals located in the area. And that turned out, you know, in 73, that wasn't known. It was found later about the big meteorite. Anyway, the curious thing there to me was he shows a triangle drawn between ancient sites that looks quite a lot like one of the crop formations called the Barbary Castle pictogram of 1991. It looks a little bit like a tetrahedron type triangle, and it connects Terra Zaboti and then Chichen Itza, that was the place I was at, and down at the bottom, can you read my thing here, there's another site there. And Tikal is one of the sites also. And then there's a site in the middle. So
okay, in the middle, which is probably the root site for most of the Mayan civilization. But
right, yeah, that's pretty close to the, where the main area there is. So anyway, also in that book, which is difficult to read, it's a pretty thick book, he talks about information coming about DNA. Okay, then I get a picture of that Barbary Castle triangle to compare. And I've got a little note near the bottom I added about that it certain indications, dreams and so on, seem to indicate that it was a representation of the consciousness unit, which is the smallest particle of consciousness and matter. And I never did write that all up, but another fellow I talked to on the phone named David Wilcox, have you ever heard of him?
Yes.
He's got a site called The Divine Cosmos. Anyway, he wrote it up on his site after I told him about it. He mentions on there that we had a telephone conversation. But, okay, when this Barbary Castle pictogram, the triangle tetrahedron type thing, this John Michel, you know who that is, right? He's written City of Revelation and what?
Yes.
And he knows a lot about these ancient numbers. He died this past year, unfortunately. Anyway, a quote from the article he had in the Seriologist, which is a crop circle journal. I used to get all of them. And it says, in traditional, okay, he said that the total of the square footage of the circles in that formation added to 31,680. And this is the quote, in traditional cosmology, 31,680 miles was given to be a measure around the sublunary world, and early Christian scholars calculated the number 3168 as emblematic of Lord Jesus Christ. The same number was previously applied to the name of a leading principle in the pagan religion. Okay, then the other part I have is, not right away, but it took a while, the different numbers in that, and I've got a link that has a big blow-up of that, that the different angles and so forth and the lengths, especially the angles, like, for example, 234 was the one to the moon glyph, and that's one of those gematria-type numbers. It's got the positive tangent of 666, so it's one of the in-between numbers. But anyway, the one that turned out to be pretty coincidental was from the center of the triangle to the lower right-hand side. It was at an angle of 120 degrees. The top was pointed straight north to zero or 360 degrees. And then from that point to the center of the ratchet spiral, which was 333 feet, like in a ratchet-type circle. So if you take the 120 degrees, okay, that angle was at 108 degrees. Now, that's a gematrian number. It's the third mark on that wheel, 3 times 36. And if you add different zeros, it relates to all these things, and it's considered a earth goddess type number. Like in India, there's 108 names of the goddess and that sort of thing. So the 108 or 120 times the 108, in other words, the two angles down to that ratchet spiral, gives the number 12,960. Okay, so see, that's that. 6 to the 4 power by 10, times 10. And I knew that that was half of the precession of the equinoxes, right? And it represented six ages. Well, this ratchet spiral had six arcs going from the center counterclockwise up until it hit the corner of the triangle. And if you divide the 12,960 times 6, you come out with 2,160, which is the length of one zodiac age. So it seems to be showing a progression through six zodiac ages. Okay, there is a link to another article I wrote about the Seven Sisters of the Pleiades, where
right.
I explained the same sort of thing in a little more detail. Well, a fellow at work had a dream where he was on a highway with this airplane, and they were building a new water treatment plant, and all this stuff happened. And I asked him what highway he was on, and it was where Highway 108 and 120 run together outside of Oakdale, not far from here. In other words, it was a coincidence of these same two numbers. And that seems to be my experience, because I not only have recorded my own dreams, and Dee is a great dreamer, my mate here, and we have Yahoo groups and so forth about dreams, and we constantly study everybody else's dream in addition to our own, plus people write to us about them. So that's the one thing I'm pretty familiar with. So the next part of that was about getting Carl Monk's information, and I started around 94, but by 96 I had gotten his, it was like a yearly code book, and this one had the Temple of the Warriors in it, which, you know, I was pretty interested in. That's where he told how there were 36 steps. That's where I stood there, right? I walked up those steps. And if you look from above, it's the same width. So his decoding, that's 36 times 36, which is 1296. And then there's 20 columns at the top in that portion. If you multiply 1296 times 20, you come out with 25,920, which is the precession of the equinox number, right? And this indicates a longitude of 119 degrees, 42 minutes, 0.5 plus decimal points west Giza. So if you go, you multiply those times degrees, minutes, and seconds, 119 times 42 times 05.1860744 equals 25920. Yeah. That's incredible stuff. And according, you know, him, it's encoded in these. You've got to look to find out what it is, right? And it's also used in the latitude with another number, and the coordinate intersect is 20. Okay, then I have a little part about the decoding of the Kukulcan pyramid. At Chichen Itza there, and that's the one you're probably familiar with this. It has 91 steps on each side, which amounts to 364. So if you count the top platform, that's the 365th, in other words, the days in a year. And that plus it has four sides and four stairways, and it's got nine terraces. So the formula is 9 times 365 times 4 times 4 gives you 52560. And that comes up to 19 degrees, 42 minutes, and 10 point something or other seconds. Okay.
So if you plot that back to Giza using Giza as a prime meridian or adjusting for, it's encoded into the pyramid, into the number of steps, the number of forces of steps, plus the top platform, etc., and it all adds up.
Right.
Both longitude and latitude.
Yeah. Anyway, the next part I have early DNA connections, and my study of this kind of started in 1990. I did a lot of studying before, in fact, since 1963. I'm almost 70 years old. I'll be 70 in 9 days. But
well, happy birthday.
Thank you. But anyway, this really intense stuff about all these crop circles and dreams and so forth started in 1990, so it's been almost 20 years. And I talked about in this early study, for example, that Keyes Vinok book, it talked about DNA, but then the people in the crop circles started talking about it and so on. Okay, later on down the road, and by the way, down below I have more details about that in what I call an extra data section, in case people want to know more about it, I've put it there. Okay, then the next one says Jeff's DNA repair dream. Because part of this was about these early DNAs is that the Mayan shaman, they call him daykeeper, named Hunbet Batsman. You ever heard of him?
I'm aware. Let me put it that way.
He was claiming, and some of this was in the Crop Circle journals, that there was something that went wrong with our DNA. This is their mythology at the beginning. And that there was going to be a DNA repair, and that this required activation of ancient sites. So he was activating all these sites in the Yucatan, and I think he's done it elsewhere. There's a lot of information to him online. But that's the first time I'd heard something like that, and it was in these crop circle journals, because some people thought that there were certain hints of DNA from the beginning. And one article talked about DNA is shaped like a radio tuning coil and can pick up on vibrations, right? And that this dowsing energy that they find, there's grid lines go across the earth, that these ancient sites are located on them, and these crop circles are too, on crossing points. And some even think that these ancient sites were built on crop circles that appeared way back, you know, thousands of years ago. So the idea
that's pretty speculative, since we don't have any history of crop circles.
Right, right. That's true. It's just, yeah, a lot of this is really speculative. But anyway, the a friend at work in 1995, a coworker, he had this dream, and in this dream, he was on a spiral staircase with other maintenance mechanics. He used to be a maintenance mechanic, but was really more of an electrician, electronics, and eventually computer. He was actually a genius with this sort of stuff. But he and these other maintenance mechanics, there was one of them on each rung of the stairway on the spiral staircase, and they all had their toolboxes there. And he opened up his toolbox, and he takes out a handgun, which he had in real life, and showed it to the guy. It was a clip type. And they put that back and brought out a revolver, a six-shooter, and showed him that one and put that back. And it was kind of the end of the dream. And I says, Jeff, that sounds like the DNA repair. He'd never heard of it, right? And I explained some of this other stuff. So I sent that to some crop circle researchers, his dream. In fact, they sent stuff about the code at the same time. And they didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it, but they acknowledged I'd sent them the letter. That was people who had run the Sussex Circular. They have a website now called News World Order, I think it is. So anyway, about 6 months later, the DNA crop circle formation appeared around August 17th, 1996. I've got a picture of it on here. It's got the double helix type thing. And the length of it was 648 feet in length. Why, it recognizes it as a gematrian number, right? And if you double that, it's 1296, right? Okay, skipping on to the next thing. In 2002, this, what they call Crooked Soli, that's the location, appeared in England there. And it looks like a tube torus. I've got pictures here of it. But it also looks like DNA in a circle, like a twisted double helix type thing. But it was made to look kind of like snake skin with all these little diamonds. So somebody cut it down. The farmer cut it down right away. He didn't want it in his field, but luckily they got this photograph. Well, in 2005, in other words, 3 years later, this fellow named Alan Brown, he got along with John Michel, and they wrote this book called Crooked Soli, A Crop Circle Revelation. And they've got a picture colorized of this Crooked Soli formation, and it really looks like snakeskin the way they got it. Well, what they discovered was that there was 1,296 little diamonds. Now, see, that's quite a coincidence, right? That number again.
Yep.
And by some of the diamonds having laid down crop, another one standing crop, they were divided into 792 and 504. See, those are also these ancient geometrian numbers. In fact, 792, you add the zero, that's the diameter of the earth. And gematria literally means measuring the earth. And this 504, it's related to other numbers like 5400, which Monk says is the coordinate intersect of the Sphinx. And also 5040 is this ancient number that Plato associated with Atlantis. And it's known as, you know, when you draw a certain or make a certain number and put an exclamation point after it. It's a mathematical symbol to multiply the numbers, like 7 with the exclamation point.
Yep.
It's 1 times 2 times 3, you know, up to 7, and that equals 5040. Anyway, I've got a picture after that of a serpent that I saw in a book. It's a rattlesnake of the type that they found a symbol of in the well at Chichen Itza. They pulled it out of there, and this is a modern-day live one, but it's coiled in a circle, and it's got these little diamond patterns. And at some point after learning all this, I remembered the hoop at the ball court at Chichen Itza has got these intertwined snakes. In fact, there's 6 little circles between the intertwined points. So this all seems to connect to each other in all these coincidences, right? So one thing I mentioned here was back to Jeff's dream, and I quote it again. Jeff took a clip-type handgun out of his toolbox and showed it to one of the mechanics. It was a clip-type pistol. Then he showed the man another gun from his toolbox, a six-shooter type revolver. And I said this, the clip-type handgun compares to the 1996 DNA crop formation, while the six-shooter type revolver compares to the 2002 crooked solely mitochondrial DNA formation. In other words, when you open the clip, in fact, they put a picture of the clip on the page now, or not the clip, but the revolver cylinder. If you pull it out, you see the little 6 holes. See, that's the same basis of this seed of life type pattern that appeared so many times. So I've got some quotes, some excerpts from the book or from a website called The Soul in Crooked Soli that talks about that and about that book. It's written by somebody else. So it's information from the book written by somebody else. And so the next section, I talk about the seed of life, and I show a picture of that, which is these 6 interlocking rings that little flower-shaped forms in the middle. And just yesterday, I made this this graphic where I put that superimposed on top of the DNA formation from Crooked Soli, and it's basically the same type of geometry, sixfold, right? So anyway, I go into the different details about that, and I mentioned another coincidence that Kukulkan, the feathered serpent that pyramid is called from by, the equivalent, the Aztecs word for that was Quetzalcoatl, if you heard that, right?
Yes.
And the Kukulkan, it's the same thing. And if you do the English alphanumerics of Quetzalcoatl, where A equals 1, B equals 2, it totals out to 153. Now, that's weird. I mean, maybe just an accident, but man, I write down coincidences, right? So, let's see. Anyway, I also say that in the 153 fish in the the New Jerusalem design, it has a measurement across. That would be one moon circle, then the circle for the earth, and then the circle for the moon again on the other side, because they use 12 moon circles. And that would be 1080 plus 7920 plus 1080 equals 12240. Well, that's 80 times 153. So that's kind of interesting that there's a connection between the New Jerusalem pattern, the earth and the moon, and this number 153. So the next part, I talk about the cosmic serpent and DNA. And this book called The Cosmic Serpent was written by Jeremy Narvi, a Canadian scholar. Do you know who that is? Or have you heard of that?
I don't know that guy, no.
Anyway, I've got a picture of the book cover on the front. It shows a serpent on the left and then a DNA molecule on the right. And let's see. When he had found out that the shaman down in the Amazon, that they were able to, like, solve medical problems and things like that and other problems that they didn't have actually that information, but yet they seemed to be able to gather the information, like what kind of herb or whatever to give somebody to cure them. So that was part of his studies. So he asked them how they learned the information when he went down to visit them. And he was told that light beings within twisted vines gave the information. He asked a shaman to draw what he saw. Later, Narbi showed the drawing to a biologist, asking if he recognized the image. The biologist responded, "What you are looking at is mitochondrial DNA." In other words, this DNA seems to be a communication, like these other guys had speculated about earlier that had used years before. And I got a little section about the Garden of Eden, because I had some dreams, and I, according to other people's dreams, there seems to be the interpretation is closer to what the Gnostics said, right? Where the tree of knowledge in the garden is something you're supposed to get, right? And anyway, Eve takes the apple, and I believe she represents the dreaming part of the self. In other words, Adam and Eve are one person. And the serpent and the tree represents wisdom, according to the Gnostics, you know, the divine Sophia, which means wisdom. And the snake represents, I believe, the ability to change by the shedding of the old skin, you know, according to Joseph Campbell and the mythologists. And so I compared that to the Sacred Symbols of Mu book. If you're familiar with that one, it has ancient symbols in it. That it shows Creator Serpent and a lot of things like that. And Churchwood, who wrote it, he said, the old people said that this Creator was not a serpent. The serpent represented the way the Creator created. So if you put those things two together, it would mean that the Creator creates by change, because the snake represents the change of the shedding of the old skin. So the Eve part of ourselves, the dreaming side, the feminine side, goes to the infinite tree in the dream world and brings back symbols, which Adam then interprets. In other words, the waking self interprets the dream symbols. So, and there seems to be something went wrong with this. In other words, that's why Eve is shown as a very small portion, just a rib size, right, compared to the Adam. So anyway, it's kind of controversial, but you can see how that's similar to this light beings in the vine of the tree and coming through DNA. So just kind of making a comparison. Okay, next part, it says pie in the fields, and it's about a crop circle formation that appeared last year. And this engineer guy figured out what it was. It's another ratchet spiral, and it represents the first 10 digits of pi. It's even got the little point, you know, so it's 3.14, you know, so on up to the 10 digits. And I've got a graphic kind of showing the details, and I've got a link to where they have a newspaper article about the guy. And below that, I show the same formation. If you put the two five-pointed stars within it, I color-coded it, and then you can see where the different gematria numbers are, and I've got where the in-between numbers are that are there. Okay, and then the next part is decagon DNA geometry. And what this is, I've found on different websites and stuff, that because I had heard this sometime before, that if you look down through the top of the DNA molecule, it forms a decagon, which is a 10-sided figure. You can draw 2 5-pointed stars within it, in other words. In other words, all this seems to relate back to this that gematrian wheel I talked about. Remember, there's 10 points? And then I saw I've got three graphics I got from those pages and three links there that shows that. Then I've got a picture of that Bithorn mandala with its 5-pointed star and 10 petals. And then I got a diagram of another crop formation with 2 5-pointed stars within it showing it. And then the next picture is a new theory about the shape of the universe. Have you ever heard that? They believe it's shaped like a dodecagon. And the article says universe could be football shaped, and this means a European football, in other words, a soccer ball. You know, it's got different kind of octagon type stuff on it, or hexagons. Well, this one would be that had 5-sided figure, pentagon, on the ball, and there's 12 of them. And this is what they think is the shape of the universe. I mean, it's weird, but anyway, I've got some links there to it. But it's just interesting. In fact, it shows a 10-sided figure in the center of it, in the circle. It was originally on a magazine cover. Anyway,
yeah, but it also shows a pentagram and a number of other shapes. There are squares, multiple squares, as well as, I don't know how to figure this in my head, but I would guess about 360 different triangles.
Yeah, I would imagine, yeah. The next part, I've got a picture of the New Jerusalem plan. This is John Mitchell, so the diagram, that is from an article, I got the link there, written by a scientist, a really top scientist at a university professor, and he named it DNA Apocalypse and the End of the Mystery, and he found a new circle in the New Jerusalem that goes just above the one that's got the three, they call the sublunar distance of 31,680. It's colored green in this diagram. And he says it relates to the dodecagon of DNA. Now, I don't entirely understand that, but it's another pretty big coincidence that coming up with the same type number. And by the way, that guy and a scientist called a mathematician, Jerry Iliano, we've got articles that he has let us put online that include these ancient numbers, but show them in scientific formulas. And Dr. Leahy, who did this New Jerusalem article, he mentions Jerry on his pages and their communications. And one of the big numbers was the number 288. Remember I said that equal double light is twice 144. That and its square, which is 82,944, fits into the formula for the fine structure constant, which, you know, you have to look it up because it takes too long to explain, but it basically has to do with subatomic particles. In the next one, did you want to say something?
I said yes, that's correct.
Okay. The next one I say the big pi coincidence, and 2 days ago, on the 8th, I went online to this site, that the Crop Circle Connector Forum, and I was going to give a link to this new page because this part of the forum talked about the Pi Crop Circle of 2008. And so I read through the links a little bit, the guy who had started it, and because he was a little hard to understand. But anyway, the key thing that he came up with that was amazing, if you take those same 10 digits of pi and multiply them, in other words, 1.1415 and so on, if you go 3 times 1 times 4 times 1 times 5 and so on, up to the last of the 10 digits shown in the crop circle, which is a 4, the total is 129,600, in other words, the square of 360. See, that's the coincidence 2 days before finding that out, after I'd already had information about this one related to the 1260, because this pi crop circle, what I related it to, it also has 10 parts, just like the Gematrian wheel. So
Yep. That's
one reason I put it there. So anyway, I put in the things that I communicated on that web page. It's quite a bit of different information. So the next part, I talk about the Great Serpent Mound, and I know you're familiar with that one in Ohio there, Adams County. Got a little diagram of it. And I talk about a book, The Mystery of Serpent Mound in Search of the Alphabet of the Gods by Ross Hamilton. I think you said you knew Ross Hamilton? Or
I know Ross, and I know the mound fairly well, so.
So anyway,
we have one person in the chat room who owns property pretty close to that mound, and
I'll be darned.
And knows quite a bit about the countryside there.
Yeah, well, I had heard about it quite a while ago and saw a webpage article on this, and later got the book. But you know, years later, in 2003, a crop circle appeared right outside the gate. It was kind of a double vesica pisci, looks kind of like a cat's eye type thing. But anyway, the part I concentrate on here is that he had this thing that the Serpent Mound demonstrates the Pythagorean Theorem. Did you ever see that one?
And yes, I have.
A squared plus B squared equals C squared. So I give the details of that. And I point out that he also said it, that Pythagoras was named after the python at Delphi, where the Delphi Oracle was. In other words, another big snake. That's what they named him after. And so it's curious that this big snake in America demonstrates the Pythagorean theorem, right? Anyway, this was this triangle, a right-sided triangle, was multiples of 34, which is twice 17, right? Remember, that's the number. If you add them up, it comes to 153. So the sides were 204, 272, and 340. Now, are you familiar with 272? Because it's also your phone number with a zero on the end, the last digit, as the megalithic yard, 2.72 feet. Pardon?
Yes, I am very well aware of that.
Yeah, that was discovered by an Englishman. So, anyway, I talk about the thing. That's where I have a picture of the tree of life and the different... because these numbers relate, the number 6 to the sun, number 8 to Mercury. So from those two, the 6 times 6 is 36, and Mercury is 8, so it's 8 times 10, 8, it's 64. 36 plus 64 is 100. That relates to the bottom one, the Earth, which is the 10th sphere. So the 10 times 10 square is 100. Okay, in the middle he has the number 816. And I tell how that relates to Saturn by different numbers in these magic squares and so forth. And then after that, I compare it to what I call the megaglyph crop circle of 2001 that appeared just a few weeks prior to the 9/11 attacks. It had the same type of numbers. I've got a little table here that spells it out. It's the total circles in each arm. There were big ones and little ones. And you've got the number 204, 272, 340. And the total of the circles, not including the central circle, was 408, which is half of 816. So seemed to be related. And then I pointed out this lady named Norma Smith found it, because there was a total of 409 circles if you had the central one, that if you do English alphanumerics on the colors of the spectrum, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, and the alphanumeric is A equals 1, B equals 2, and so forth. So you'd find the value of RED, right? That's 27. Anyway, add them all together, it comes to 409. And green was the number 49. See, that's a harmonic of the 409. So it seemed to be emphasizing green because the 409 is 360 plus the 49, right? 409. Okay, green, that's the heart chakra, chakra 4, and that's the same thing. This megaglyph is one of those seed of life types. This one's shown like a closed aperture, and it appeared right near Milk Hill where that white horse is on the side of the hillside. So anyway,
yeah.
I also point to an article where we wrote about the chakras being displayed in crop circles. And then I show a picture of the snake crop circle of 1999, which is reminiscent of Serpent Mound. And this fellow in, I think it's Holland, he wrote an article about it. I sent him some information, and he included it on the page, so I had the quote there. And it's from Maioria Tim's book, Beyond Prophecies and Predictions. And this is the quote. The name Quetzalcoatl is derived from the Quetzal bird of Guatemala and Mexico. The Quetzal had golden, green, and scarlet plumage and was considered the most beautiful of birds. Quetzal also means precious. Coatl is serpent. In the Mayan language, Kukulkan means approximately the same thing. According to Humbert's men, Ku is sacred. God, a sacred karma god. Kul, K-U-L, is coccyx, the base of the spine, where the latent spiritual energy resides. Kan, C-A-N, sometimes they spell it K-A-N, means serpent. Kukulkan, therefore, is synonymous with Kundalini, which is what the Kukulkan-Quetzalcoatl archetype is all about. Of course, To be iconographically correct, however, the god Quetzalcoatl is not himself the feathered serpent, but the one who emerges from the serpent, just as the spirit emerges from the body through the top of the head, and the morning star emerges from the horizon. So, see, that connects it back to the chakras. So that was pretty interesting.
Well, another connection, this is kind of an offshoot from that, the Maya tracked the planet Venus very carefully.
Right, that's right.
If you plot its course through the heaven, assuming that you could see through the earth, it would be in spirals or helix. So, you know, there's another connection there.
Right. And the two snakes in the on the Mayan calendar, and probably the two that it shows intertwined on that hoop on at Chichen Itza, the Quetzalcoatl or Kukulcan has a dark brother, and you know they believe that this is related to Quetzalcoatl or Kukulcan was known associated with the morning star Venus, right? The other one with the evening star. Well, in these myths, which also shows up in dreams, the morning star is like the new beginning when the sun arises. The evening star, where the setting sun, that's considered death. So it's like a death rebirth as the sun goes down and then the rebirth as it arises. And also, the planet Venus has these conjunctions of every 36 days that are, in other words, there's a 36 number, right, that trace
right.
A five-pointed star. If you see where the conjunctions are related to the Earth. Here's another strange thing. Jesus in the Bible is related to the morning star, but so is Lucifer. Lucifer is related to the word light, you know, like luciform or, you know, being lucid. And so there's a question there of whether just simply evil is what that means. I mean, it might mean the death side or the destruction side. You know, just like Shiva and Kali are known as the destruction. Because in the Hindu, they have Brahma the creator, Vishnu the sustainer, and then Shiva the destroyer. So you have these ages where they begin, they're sustained for a while, and then they're destroyed. They have to be destroyed for the new one to begin. In other words, you start all over with the Brahma, and the, you know. And so it's similar to these time cycles. And we're coming near the end of this Mayan one, which will be December the 21st, 2012. And the winter solstice sun will be aligned to the center of the galaxy, which is in the mouth of this cosmic serpent, the Ouroboros, represented by the Milky Way. Milky Way forms a big circle outside that we look out there. It just happens to be aligned to the center of the galaxy, and there's a gap in there that makes it look like a serpent biting its tail. So, and John Major Jenkins, he's done quite a bit of work on this, and he analyzed one of the ball courts, the one at Itzapan, and that's what the alignment is, and that's what it means when, like, they have pictures of a snake with a ball in its mouth, and that sort of thing, and kind of the ball coming out of this birth-looking frog. Anyway, that's what the symbolism is. So it's all those things are filled with these coincidences that are all pretty amazing. Okay, the next part, I have all this extra data, which I won't go into the whole thing, but at the very end, I put some really speculative stuff that I think is interesting. I just did that this afternoon, the baseball 153 DNA coincidence, that in the year 2002, which is the same year that Crooked Soli formation appeared, then mitochondrial DNA. Of course, I didn't realize this until later. Somebody contacted me about this, a guy named Steve, and that the teams, and because I had this stuff way earlier about the symbolism of baseball, the geometry and the different numbers and things, and we have a page about the baseball symbolism. We didn't include this part, though. This is the first time I put this part online, that he informed me that all four of the playoff teams were underdogs, and like two of them were the wildcard team. And, you know, it's kind of amazing they had all the underdogs there. And the teams were the Angels, the Cardinals, the Twins, and the Giants. The letters of those names, A, C, T, G, are what they use for the DNA bases, the initials of those teams. Okay, this is the same year as that mitochondrial DNA. Now, it's pretty speculative, but I thought it was pretty amazing. Eventually, the Angels won that. So anyway, I've got about, that's the end of the thing. There's a lot of more detailed information there and links, but that's the basic thing. So I guess I'm ready for either questions or if you want me to go into more detail about any one part.
Well, actually, I think where we need to go with my audience is a little more detail on some of the encoding or decoding, I guess would be a better way to say it, of the features in some of the ancient sites. My audience, a lot of my audience, are very much into the Native American mounds as well as the Mesoamerican sites,
mm-hmm.
and all the features that are in those sites that all point back to Giza and how they do that. So I guess where we need to do, what we need to do then is just point them to some of the more detailed stuff of Carl's, right?
Yeah, we could. I don't have all that stuff at my fingertips right now. I just kind of had this page I printed out. But on our site, like I say, that the Code of the Ancients, the stuff about Carl Munk, there's 14 different articles. I don't remember all the details about the numbers, but one example is in Florida, there's the, what do they call it, the water hole there that some people think it used to be. It was what Ponce de Leon was looking for, the Fountain of Youth.
Right.
What's the name of that one?
Here, Silver Springs, I think, is the one you're talking about, but there are a couple of places that claim that.
Yeah, right. Anyway, they got the decoding of that one, and it relates to the radium. Anyway, we got the information on the page.
So years ago, or even up until months ago, there were a number of videos on YouTube where Carl explained his theory. But
right.
when I tried to call them up with my bookmarks, they weren't any good anymore. Do you have any good links to those?
I saw some of those. I haven't lately, so I don't know whether they're gone. A lot of times stuff gets removed from there. I do have videos I've bought of Carl Munk's talks. That's what they took those from, I'm sure. It's the same thing.
Well, that's probably why they went down, because it was copyrighted material.
Right. Now, that link I've got to Carl's page, the Pyramid Matrix,
yep.
They've got places where you can call to, you know, order the different books and tapes and stuff. And there's a lot of different things he has for sale on that, and they're really worthwhile if you're interested in it.
I'll find that link and post it if I can find it again. It was up near the top, wasn't it?
I might mention one other thing. There's other things that he decoded. An example is the Nazca line markings.
Right.
He did, I think, at least a couple of those, I believe, one of which was the bird looking one. I think there's more than one bird, but by counting the number of feathers and that sort of thing. And that one came out to, I think, relate to, what was it, the square root of 3 or something. I can't remember offhand what the number came out to be. Another thing he's done is the face on Mars that Richard Hoagland.
Right.
That seems to fit in the same thing. If you take the DNM pyramid there as the prime meridian, then it all works out. And are you very familiar with Richard Hoagland's work?
Yes, I am.
And his partners, because part of the message of the monuments on Mars, according to him, have to do with a certain shape inside planets and suns and so forth. It's an energy. It's not an actual thing, but it's the arrangement of the energy, the geometry of it, is two tetrahedrons interlaced, one pointing to the North Pole, one to the South Pole. And the base of each pyramid touch on 120 degrees around the equator. The tetrahedron is a three-sided triangle, so the bottom looks like is also a triangle. And Richard Hoagland was a planetary scientist, and he knew, you know, astronomer type guy, and
right.
He remembered, like, the great Rebs. Okay, these points where they touch it about 19.5 north and south. Actually, it's more like 19.47 something or other, but pretty close to 19.5. And the great red spot on Jupiter is located at that location. And on Mars, Olympus Mons, which is the greatest volcano in our solar system. Like, if you put Mount Everest next to it, it would look like a little pimple, right?
Yep.
That it's located at 19.5. And then if you go around around the planet another 120 degrees, it aligns with the face on Mars. And he found out there was these mathematicians, they call them pure mathematicians, that a lot of times they do all this math work that may not have much to do with reality, right? Or at least that they know of at the time. But they talked about spinning double tetrahedrons inside spheres, and it predicts...
Yep.
It predicts a hexagon at the poles, especially the North Pole. And when he read that, he remembered that the North Pole of Saturn is hexagon-shaped. Should be round, right?
Right.
They've got pictures online of that. And there's only...
Well, the other thing he does, and I think he actually links out of that section on Hoagland's site to the Maxwell equations that were doctored in spite of Maxwell's actual work.
Oh, really?
It's basically, according to Hoagland, and this is digressing a lot, but according to Hoagland, it doctored Maxwell's original equations and got rid of what amounted to the unified field theory that was buried in Maxwell's original equations. So Maxwell's work on electromagnetism is not what the work that we know is not what Maxwell did originally.
Oh.
And there's a lot to that argument, actually.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember if it's the same thing, but I remember, you know, I've got videos and books and stuff on Hoagland also, that if you take a steel ball, for example, and shoot it up and it makes a certain arc, when its trajectory, and then you have the ball spinning at a, you know, fast speed, and shoot it, it has a different trajectory. So
right.
According to him, all the math has been done when you're not spinning. So you need to do a whole new math if you're going to figure out
right.
spinning type things, which seems to be about, you know, the kind of math he's coming up with.
Right, and the spinning brings me back to what I mentioned earlier about number theory, or wave number theory, or wave theory.
Right.
Or wave number.
Yeah.
Where the number of rotations is actually a function of both space and time. And this is deep into trigonometry, actually. But when you plot something rotating over time, it comes out as a sinusoidal wave.
Uh-huh.
So that's where they get the term wave number. So n equals some integral, or equal some not whole number, or, you know, not a full number of rotations, it then would be some decimal,
right?
Or it could be something plus radians. So my contention is that somewhere buried in all this code, and we have a whole bunch more work to do, is that in addition to the exact geographic location with respect to Pisa, there is also a chronological encoded message there, too. We just haven't figured it out yet.
Right. That just kind of reminded me of another little dream coincidence thing. That, remember I talked about that megaglyph? It had the 409 circles. It was huge. It was like over 700 feet. And it is the basic seed of life type with the six rings, but shown in the position what I call a closed aperture, and it was near that White Horse on Milk Hill. Well, the site run by Paul Vigay, who died this year also, this past year, he had a posting board there where he showed the different crop circles and then people could comment. So after that appeared, I went there, and this guy had made this post. He went by the name Dreamer. And he says that after he saw that crop circle, he had this dream where all these numbers appeared, like 1111, 777, and so forth, right? So, and there was, seemed to be all sorts of mathematical stuff happening in this dream. So when he woke up, he started to figure it out, and he eventually came out with, I think this is it, 1111.777 divided by 409, that's the number of circles, right, comes out to 2.718, and then it goes on out, irrational number, right? And he says, isn't this the base of the logarithms called E, your E prime?
Right.
And I made an attachment there because I knew about Hoagland's work and different things and said yes. In fact, they think the megalithic yard of 2.72 feet is actually rounded off of that base of the logarithms number. In other words, instead of 2.72, it's 2.718 something, right? So if you round off the 8, it comes up to 2.72. So
the Euler's number, I believe, is where you're going with that.
That they what?
I believe that's connected to Euler's number. That's spelled E-U-L-R, Euler.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Mathematician.
Yeah. Anyway, this base of the logarithms, this is one thing that Hoagland connected with Karl Monk because the megalithic yard and so forth. But what he also found on the face of Mars thing is E prime 2 or something like that, he called it, which is very close to the same number as that base of the logarithm, that E, but a little bit different. And it's derived from this double tetrahedron inside a sphere. If you take the ratio of the surface area of the tetrahedron, the ratio of that and the surface area of the sphere, it comes out to 2.718, very close to the base of the logarithms. Okay, that megaglyph, you can draw a Star of David within it because it's a six-fold, right? And
yep.
In three dimensions, the Star of David can represent that double tetrahedron. Some people these days, you know, like light worker, New Age types, they call that the Merkabah, this double tetrahedron. And in that book, The Keys of Enoch, he talked about that too, that he called it the divine light vehicle for ascension. You know, so I don't know how much of that. I mean, that's pretty far out, but it's just interesting you see the same type shapes. And that same shape is actually in that Seed of Life series. At one point, you see the double tetrahedron in that also. So it all seems connected.
Joseph, we have a caller. And this is the guy who happens to live close to Serpent Mound.
Oh, great.
So let me see if I can get him on the line here. Things starts cooperating. Hang in there, William. Rick. There we go. I think I got you now. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi, Joseph.
Hello.
I've been having all kinds of computer problems. I guess everyone else has, so I apologize for calling in so late. But fascinating, your explanation of the numbers and the related sites. I want to just basically tell you that it's very impressive.
Thank you.
There's way more questions than there is time to answer them. I'm no expert on pi or the numbers. I did get a chance a couple years ago to basically see some work done at the Newark, Ohio site where the ancients were making the Octagon Mound and studying the circle and its relation to degrees, etc.
Uh-huh.
But I know in your conversations listening, and it seems like I listened to it three times, I don't know whether it's all pre-recorded or what, you refer to the Great Pyramid many times in studies. I was just curious if the Red Pyramid or the other pyramids would qualify with the same numerical values? If have they been applied to the other pyramids?
To the best of my knowledge, Carl's theory incorporates them in the theory, and they help define the basis of that meridian. Am I getting that right, Joseph?
Right. He decodes a bunch of the pyramids in Egypt there.
Okay, that was
there, and also the Sphinx.
Most likely, the culture or the mathematical formulas and the knowledge of the ancients was present and practiced over quite a period of time, at least through the construction of Stonehenge, through the pyramid constructions, and through the Sphinx, and which the Sphinx, I believe, is the oldest, I believe, in the Giza plateau.
Right. They think it's about 12,500 years ago that the Sphinx appeared.
Right. And apparently the pyramid culture that came after the Sphinx used the same thing. And I do recall, and Rick, you had him on the show, and he was a speaker a couple years ago, one of the research engineers at Giza, the Great Pyramid. All of the faces in ancient Egyptian rock art was basically starting out with a circle.
Right.
And most of their designs basically started with a circle. Is that correct?
Right, yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
Okay. I'll go down and just kind of listen on the side. Seems like, I don't know, I mostly called in to be sure I was current, because something's wrong with the blog shows tonight. I mean, far as keeping up to speed, either that or we're repeating a lot.
Yeah.
Nothing's pre-recorded, is it, Rick?
Correct. Not a thing.
Okay.
It's all live, at least from mine and Joseph's end, it's all live. I don't know what everybody's hearing.
Well,
getting back to the alignments and everything for Giza, and this is one that I don't think you're aware of, Joseph, but I've done quite a bit of research into that area and talked to a lot of people who've done even more. One of the things that cropped up in my research was I was informed by a longtime student of it that the line of, or the shadow of dawn is how he phrased it. So, in other words, on the spring equinox, when the sun's rising in the east-northeast, it casts a line called the dawn shadow, right? And it's not straight north and south. It's actually angled.
Uh-huh.
And when it touches the left paw of the Sphinx, it also touches the top of the pyramid, of the Great Pyramid.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I've heard that one.
And if you continue that line and use a few other things, such as, for instance, a straight east-west line through the paw, you can come up with a five-pointed star with its upper tip at the top of the Great Pyramid and its eastern tip at the paw of the Sphinx. So,
Very interesting.
Yeah, and it actually works out. I drew it out, and everything works. So
I'll definitely look that up. I'd like to know more about that.
Yeah, I didn't know about Carl Munk's work at that time, but I'm kind of anxious to find some time of my own to work on that and investigate it some.
Right. Well, if you find out more, I'd appreciate you sending me an email or something.
I'd like to know more. We're down to 16 minutes or so left in this 2 hours, which doesn't seem possible to me.
I know, it went fast, didn't it?
Yes, it did. William, do you have anything else?
Not too much. I probably missed most of the stuff. I'll go back in the archives and listen to it.
Okay,
Is any of this related to the fact that all the pyramids seem to be in true north-south alignment?
I'm confident it does relate to that. Of course, I'm also confident that pyramids are much, much, much older than what the archaeologists tell us, and even older than what the geologists are telling us.
Yeah, I think so too.
I agree with you. I mean, I just didn't know if there was any correlation. It seems to me like, you know, you get the pyramids in South America, you get those in Egypt, and if I recall, someone had indicated about 95% of all the pyramids on the Earth, which is well over 1,000, all were within pretty close to the Tropic of Cancer, within 5 degrees north and south, mostly being just north.
That would be true for all of them except the ones in China.
Exactly, right, those in China. And then I guess the same mathematical theories would apply to the step pyramids and some of things. It's kind of, you know.
Yeah, Carl worked out a whole bunch of them, and I don't know the details well enough to try to relate it intelligently.
Yeah.
But Dee jumped around, and she found the link to some videos. So let me just repost that. It's actually a MySpace page. I don't know if they're actually legal as far as Carl's concerned, but I'm just reposting a link. So you can, if you're still in the chat room, William, you can check them out. And it's, I find it very compelling stuff.
Oh, okay. All right. You're going to put that link up, right?
It's up in the chat room.
All right.
So the so whoever owns that MySpace might be in trouble, but I'm just reposting a link. So.
I haven't figured that MySpace out. I mean, I'm back and forth on it some, but I've been kind of busy. I lost my mother Monday evening.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, William.
Yeah, she's been very ill for quite some time. I've talked about it. I've been going back and forth between Indiana and mowing grass and trying to keep the place up. So we got a funeral planned for Saturday, and I've been pretty busy.
There's one thing I wanted to mention. You live near Serpent Mound?
About 50 miles away.
Because I don't know whether you're interested in this, but once a year for the last quite a few years, since 2003, they have a meeting there, and it's run quite a bit by Jeffrey Wilson, who is a major crop circle researcher in the United States.
Oh, okay.
And he's the one that investigated that crop circle that appeared outside of Serpent Mound. So I've been wanting to go there. I've almost committed to go there a couple of years ago. But if you're nearby, it would be something to check out. They talk about Serpent Mound and all these other different things.
Yep. Jeff Wilson, Independent Crop Circle Researcher Association, I believe is how.
Right.
I think that crop circle was, let's say, 5 years ago or some time.
Yeah, it was 2003. There's been other ones in Ohio and other places in the United States. But that
most of them, to my knowledge, have been relatively recent, that the crop circle basically has really been popular in the last 30 years, and it seemed like it all started in the U.K. area. And there has been two or three different articles on TV where they've demonstrated how these were forgeries made by man or what have you.
Yeah, there's a big controversy of whether they're forgeries, but I've got a article about arguments against the hoax theory of crop circles.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it with a search or go to my crop circle page. And
there are actually some scientific tests that can discriminate between the man-made ones and the quote-unquote, natural formation.
Right. There's the BLT research team that does scientific tests on them, and they find out abnormalities within the circles. So that's just one of many reasons why a lot of people, including scientists and engineers that have really studied it in depth, believe that. These TV shows, especially the National Geographic show, are terrible about, they just give this skeptical view.
Well, they're all one-sided.
Some of the elements are a little better, but they don't show that scientific work and the other reasons.
Right. And I agree with you 100%, Joseph.
And another reason is this professor, he died a few years ago, called Hawkins. He did some decoding of Stonehenge, and they asked him to look at these crop circles, and he took all these measurements, and he found out that they were demonstrating ratios by geometry.
Uh-huh.
That had these different numbers that you could put into fractional things, and they matched the diatonic ratios of the musical scale corresponding to the white keys of the piano. And he looked through and he talked to other scientists. He put it in scientific magazines. about, has this ever been known before? In other words, to demonstrate those musical scales through this geometry, and nobody could find any record of it. And it's similar to Euclid's postulates. And they say that after you hear of what it is, it's not so hard to understand. But to invent one that's never been known, it takes some kind of genius. You know, you better be a Euclid. Well, he found four different ones, and then he found, and he put this all out in scientific magazines, and then he found a fifth theorem that incorporated all the other four, and he said he was going to withhold that for a year or so to see if any of the other scientists out there, mathematicians, could solve what it is. He found out what it is, and none of them did. So after a while, he came out with this fifth theorem.
That's
and
very
so that's just another reason to think that, you know, these old boys from the pub can go down there and stomp these out.
Right,
because it's more than just one of them.
Every time I hear about crop circles, I always get an image of the Anasazi. I think that's the right word in the Southwest. They're spiral symbols, and you know that is kind of unique, I guess, to the Southwest.
But, well, actually, it's also common in
other places too.
It's South Africa and Australia.
It seems to me that
also in Ireland at LaGrange.
Right.
That's
okay.
One of the most ancient sites. It has the spirals.
That's a pretty much symbolic mathematical symbol, in my opinion.
Right.
You know, a progressively increasing or a progressively decreasing circular design around one center. The only thing common is
Gunnar Thompson goes into that in great detail. It also goes back to ancient Crete, the Minoan civilization, and some others. So it's been around a very, very long time.
Yeah. You've heard of the Yamaguni Pyramid underneath the ocean off Okinawa near Japan?
Yeah, it's off Okinawa. It's almost inside of Taiwan, in fact.
Right. Anyway, Carl Monk did a decoding of that also. And they say that would have been active when that was water was at the lower level where that is would have been like over 12,000-13,000 years ago.
Right.
So
right,
if the
right.
code would be at least that old if that's correct. Of course there's a dispute of whether it's a man made thing, but
right.
it sure looks man made and even has kind of a carving thing. It looks a little bit like a Aztec headdress figure.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. It could very well be it was a natural thing, but they kind of added some things, like there's bore holes and looks like they'd put in posts and different things like that. So.
But associated with it, not necessarily with the pyramid itself, but some of the other features, there are statues of turtles, statues of other animals, effigies. So that's kind of hard to label as natural formations.
Yeah. I was going to mention one other thing about you're talking about the Hope Wells in Ohio and all that. I had some information here. Let's see. Serpent Mound. And there was another fellow wrote a book. Got it here. Find it. Okay. There it is. It was William Romaine, and he put he had a book, Mysteries of the Hope Well. Jeffrey Wilson told me about this. We had a long telephone talk a few years ago. And he found that there was a certain unit of measure they used that was 1053 feet. It was that's what he calls the Hope Well measure.
1.053?
Right, and in his book on the back appendix section, he demonstrates that on Serpent Mound to show the different distances of that. Okay, to me, that 1053, if you work with these gematria, it relates to the 153 that I talk so much about on this page, because it's 900 plus 153.
Okay.
There's a lot of similar numbers like that. And I found this when I was searching that this fellow had this thing about the Hopewell measure. He also reduced it to a yard of 2.106 feet, Now, see, that would relate to the 216 number. This, if you ignore the zero, in other words, six to the third power, says that is about 7.2 inches less than Tom's megalithic yard. So,
does
in
that,
other words, 1053 divided by 500 would be 2.106.
Mm-hmm. I think, does that site come in line with one of the historical sites you were referring to earlier for relating back to the Great Pyramid?
Carl related everything back to the Great Pyramid, and he, pardon me for jumping in here, Joseph, but he was able to derive the numbers of each and every site that anybody put in front of him. I'm talking about ancient sites.
Right. Yep.
To make this code work for them. And it isn't a matter of changing any number. All the numbers already exist in these sites. It's a matter of picking out what features encode those numbers.
All right. Gotcha.
In this web page I had, I put in certain parts about these numbers and stuff. And under the part where it says Carl Monk finds geometrian numbers related to the code, and remember I read the one about the Babylonia where it had 129,600 foot was related to Shark Mountain North Bahamian Island, and that number is the square of 36. And then the Babylonia Menai unit of was a unit of volume, 7776 cubic inches by modern recognized.
I've always kind of wondered myself where the 360 number in degrees, where that originated.
Right. Well, like I say, they claim that these were in place before written history began, and one of the most ancient places was Sumer, where Iraq is. It later became the Akkadian Kingdom, and then later Babylonia. And they had this unit of 60, which they call sos. And I think it was Campbell or somebody said that they probably used that because it's divisible, the number 60, by so many other numbers. In other words, you can make them fractional much easier. So it's
also the number 60 fits into the perfect triangle, which also fits into the most powerful wave, I guess, whether you'd be talking electronic sound or what. But on a straight line, if you made a bunch of triangles side to side, and, you know, you had a 60-degree angles, all of them, that's your maximum power angle from both sides of the wave, if you want to call it, or a centered wave. I don't know that that means anything, but...
So... What I believe, and one reason I made this page like this, was about this DNA connection, apparently psychic power type stuff. And an example, let's say dowsing, where the dowsing rods move, or even the Ouija board and so forth. You're not conscious of what it's doing. You're probably moving it yourself, but you're completely unconscious of. In fact, Ouija board, it can spell out all sorts of pretty amazing stuff. I've tried it myself. And, you know, a lot of it's kind of foolish, but what I believe it is, it's working through your DNA cells, and you're actually getting a communication from elsewhere, in other words, from your higher self or some dream world or entities from another dimension, somehow communicating you through that method of control. Even, let's say, channeling, you know, like mediums, they probably are completely taken over by it. I'm not saying it's a good idea to do it, but you know what I mean?
Well,
apparently, if this idea of the DNA repair is going to happen, we're going to have any more. But anyway, what this does is give a good theoretical argument that the way the ancients knew all that knowledge was because they were connected to this other world, just like Narbi found out that the Amazon shamans, they talk to the light beings in the twisted vine, and it's a shape of mitochondrial DNA. In other words... could have been found out how to position their ancient sites. They could have been given all these numbers and so forth.
Joseph, we're down to 49 seconds remaining.
Uh-oh.
And I have to thank you for being on here. I want to mention Ancient American Magazine. I'm not going to get going for it tonight, but I think we might have to have you back on, Joseph, to kind of complete some of our thoughts.
Yeah, I sure hope so. And in the meantime, I'm going to be reading up your data and checking those links. Thanks, Rick. I'll go down and free up the last 30 seconds. Joseph, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
All righty.
This is the Oopa Loopa Cafe, where the heroes of old come alive and legends live again. A place where history is exciting. A place where adventures begin. Come with us and explore.
And we are done. Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night, all.